Hey, this is Adam Sorensen, politics producer at Time.com. Welcome back to The Call, a weekly conversation with Time's political reporters on what they've been working on and the latest from Washington. Joining me this week is Time's healthcare staff writer, Kate Pickert. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
So it's been 6 months since the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act passed, and a wave of new provisions are just now beginning to kick in. Can you talk a bit about where things stand now?
So the idea is... I mean, you're absolutely right. A bunch of stuff kicked in this week on Thursday, and it was intentional. These were some of the consumer protections, insurance regulations that are kind of basically universally popular. And, Democrats, when they wrote the bill, they front-loaded it so that a lot of these things would kick in 6 months after the bill was signed, which happens to conveniently be about 5 weeks before the election. So the idea, and of course what President Obama said and a lot of Democratic leaders, to get Democrats in Congress to vote for this bill, against the tide of opposition, they said, this is going to become more popular over time as people learn about it. And once these provisions kick in 6 months, it's going to be even more popular. And of course, that's not what's happened. So the polling, shows that the legislation itself, sort of generically, if you ask people if they like healthcare reform, about half of people say no, they oppose it. So these things are kicking in, and I can explain them. But basically, from a political standpoint, it's been sort of another failure of the Democrats to kind of sell what they spent so much time and energy and capital getting passed.
Just very briefly, from 30,000-foot perspective, what are these new things kicking in now, and why do they not lend themselves to that sales pitch?
I'll give you sort of the basic rundown of them, although I think what's interesting about them is while they sound great from 30,000 feet, if you look at them through a more objective, kind of microscope, there actually are a lot of caveats that actually even mean that, they won't expand access as much as they purport to do. But from 30,000 feet, insurance companies will no longer be able to deny coverage to kids with pre-existing conditions. How can you be against that, right? Very popular. The insurers can no longer set lifetime limits on insurance policies. So this is like, for people that are very ill or ill over a long period of time, sometimes bump up against their policy limit, which, the policy may say, we're never going to spend more than $5 million on you, no matter how sick you are or how long you have the policy. So if someone has, a very difficult cancer to treat and they're in chemotherapy or they need some kind of experimental treatment or drugs, they can hit these ceilings, which are admittedly very high, but it's really kind of sad because it's the sickest people that hit them. So those will be done away with. Insurance companies will also no longer be able to cancel your policy retroactively. And insurance companies sometimes do this, although it's actually very rare. Democrats are very eager to tout this, but it really only affects 10,000 or fewer people a year. But basically what happens is sometimes insurance companies, someone gets sick and expensive, and the insurance company will cancel the policy and say, you made a mistake on your application when you submitted it to us. So, someone may discover that they have breast cancer and they didn't disclose to their insurance company that they saw a psychiatrist 10 years ago. And the things are completely unrelated, but it's with, under the old rules was still grounds for an insurer to cancel a policy. So that's over. Again, something that's hard to be against, right? That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's also really popular is to allow kids to stay on their parents' insurance policies until they turn 26. So this is actually a common misconception. If you're 26, this doesn't apply to you. It's 25 and younger. You can stay on your parents' policy as a dependent.
Uh-huh.
So that's popular, and it's really important, actually, because about 30% of people in the age group between 19 and 25 are uninsured, and they represent a gigantic slice of the total population of the U.S. that's uninsured. So that's a really important one. The last big one is that insurance companies can no longer make you pay a copay or co-insurance if you're just getting preventive care. So insurance companies are required to cover at 100% preventive care. So if you get vaccines or, an annual physical or a mammogram or things that are, considered preventive care. Now, I have to say that, this is kind of the rundown that a Democrat would give you on these new provisions. But digging in a little deeper, and I actually read the regulatory language for these, there are a lot of caveats. They don't apply to all plans. You may be excluded from these rules for some reason. For the pre-existing conditions for kids one, for instance, insurance companies have to offer, it can't turn someone away, but they can charge whatever they want, which is basically the same as turning people away. So if you have a kid with a pre-existing condition, you might be able to get insurance for that kid, but it might cost you a fortune, so you might not be able to get it. And some insurance companies are actually saying they're no longer going to sell these policies at all. So the government can't force them to offer certain products. If they don't offer a product, they can't be accused of turning someone down for it.
If the bullet points sound so good, why aren't more Democrats talking about them?
Yeah, Democrats are terrified to talk about health care reform. I think the only Democrats talking about health care reform are blue dogs in the House that voted against the bill. So they're running ads saying, oh, I'm so independent. I voted against Obamacare, you know. But folks that did vote for the bill, there are very few of them across the country touting it. And it's, you know, because the public opinion polls show that I think it's for two reasons, really. I think it's true when Democrats say that people don't really understand the bill and they hate it for some of the wrong reasons. I think there's some truth to that. I also think it just fits right into this narrative of too much government, too much spending. Even that, obviously that's very simplistic, but I think it feeds into that narrative and gives voters a lot of trepidation about the government and kind of what Obama's been doing.
Uh-huh. Speaking of that narrative, the House Republicans just unveiled their new proposed governing platform, the Pledge to America is what they're calling it. And it did involve some things on healthcare. Of course, the first thing they'll always say is they want to repeal and replace what they call Obamacare.
Good luck.
Right. And they haven't gone too much into detail about what exactly they would replace it with. They began to dip their toe in that water in this rough platform. What were your thoughts on that? And was that in any way a realistic plan?
No. I think if you've been covering the healthcare debate, very little in the Republican plan for healthcare is going to be news at all. They say they want, of course, repeal and replace, which is totally unrealistic, at least in the near future, as long as we have a Democratic president. They say that they want malpractice reform, which, you know, sounds great. Sure. There are too many lawyers like clogging up the courts with frivolous lawsuits. Yes. Right. But really, studies that have been done, a lot of objective studies and good studies that I've read, because I've written about this before, about malpractice reform, say that even if you cap damages, which is what they're talking about when they talk about tort reform, it really only could cut 1% or less of total healthcare spending. So it's certainly not a plan to fix the healthcare system. But they also say they want to be able to sell insurance across state lines. And that's, you know, I guess that rings true with some people, but there are some big problems with that too, including this race to the bottom problem, which is people will just buy insurance from a company in a state that has the least amount of consumer protections, which just makes it cheaper. So that's a real problem. But one thing that they did say that was actually interesting was they said in their platform that they do want people to, with pre-existing conditions, to be able to get coverage. However, they slipped in some language there that with some really heavy caveats. One, they don't say anything about cost. So if you basically, you know, you've heard about the individual mandate, right? The big,
sure,
bad, evil individual mandate that a lot of people are suing over in court. Without an individual mandate, that is a requirement that everyone buy insurance, you really can't realistically force insurers to cover people without pre-existing conditions if you want to give them that coverage at an affordable rate. Because unless everyone's in the system, rates just go completely haywire. So, of course, the Republicans don't have an individual mandate
right,
in their plan, but they want coverage for pre-existing conditions. So that's one problem. But there are other very unworkable aspects of their pre-existing condition thrust that there's not a lot of detail. I mean, their plan on healthcare was less than one page. And one of their bullet points was strengthen the doctor-patient relationship, which who could be against that? But how exactly?
Well, thank you very much, Kate.
Thanks, Adam.
For more political news and analysis, head over to time.com/politics. Once again, I'm Adam Sorensen, and this is The Call. Tune in next week.